We're here at the Edinburgh Fringe talking about Graziano, which is from the company that also brought you The Unknown Soldier, which is well worth looking up some of the reviews for that piece. This is directed by Michelle Yim, and it's written and performed by Ross Erickson. And Ross, I want to start with a question that's very broad, really. This year, I think more than ever, there is a lot of Shakespeare, but almost no direct original scripts being performed. Lots of people are, you know, exploring and using and taking liberties with Shakespeare. So I'm going to ask you a very personal question. Why do you think it's all right to take liberties with Shakespeare?
Oh, because Shakespeare took liberties with everybody else. We all know that he pinched his ideas off of people like Marlowe and classic texts. So I'm just using him as he used others.
And, you know, in a way, the Shakespeare canon just is really ripe for it. You know, you can ask so many questions about so many characters and explore what would have happened if, and let's just focus on that one. I guess it's a real creative opportunity as well.
Yeah, it is. There's always all reinterpretations of what Shakespeare is and his various plays, but you can do a lot with him. You can explore more about him. And I think, in a way, this was... Graziano came about because I wanted to explore the Merchant of Venice, because the fact is it was the second play I was ever in my entire life, not counting a couple of things at school, but my second sort of semi-professional performance, and it was in The Merchant of Venice I played Graziano. And ever since then, it's been in the back of my mind that there's more to the story than we normally get.
But also, you know, that play opens with Antonio and a peer group of people that probably see themselves as good guys, you know, particularly in relation to their, you know, views on Jews and stuff like that. But in context, they weren't good guys, were they?
No, there is not one person in the entire play that I think comes off well, especially with the group of Salerio, Solania, Bassanio, Graziano and all that, and especially Antonio. They when we originally did it, we explored these characters despite the direction of the play that going that time in the direction of most of The Merchant of Venice, where there's the lovers and the... It just didn't gel with me, because I couldn't... There wasn't one line that was uttered by any of these that you couldn't turn around and go, well, he's a nasty piece of work, isn't he? Especially Bassanio. I hated Bassanio. And I thought, he's just a horrible person. And Portia. Everybody goes on about how Portia, how wonderful Portia is. She's just a spoiled, rich person.
But as you head between the lines, you know, of these kind of, you know, key classic works, what happens to the original lines to you as a writer?
The original lines, in our piece, I don't use the original lines because it's set 20 years after the original story, so it's sort of looking back at the story.
Are they source material?
They are source material. I use the source material. The structure, I refer back to the play because obviously I don't want people to have to go to see The Merchant of Venice before they come and see Graziano, because otherwise that's a really pointless thing. So I have to revisit the story during the piece to make sure people understand what I'm talking about. So I do refer back to those incidents, those lines, and it's quite... For example, Portia's lovely speech about mercy, about how it comes from, like a gentle rain from heaven, how it blesses him that gives and him that takes. Well, where was her mercy to Shylock? She'd rooted around and found out an ancient Venetian law that said that if a foreigner threatens the person of a Christian, that they could take half that foreigner's goods and give the other half to the victim. And she searches this out so she can really torture Shylock. Her purpose in that court is not just to come in and win the case and free Antonio for her husband, her husband's best friend. No, she wants to persecute and push Shylock over the edge. So when you look at it like that, you think, oh yeah, where is the mercy? Where's the mercy she's speaking about? Because she doesn't show any to Shylock.
When Shylock, you know, makes the case for, are we that different from you? And, you know, why wouldn't you seek revenge in my position? Yeah. Do you think they, you know, they're so ingrained in their kind of fascism that they hear it but ignore it? Or do you think as humans they still hear it? Do you know, do they in any way understand what he's saying?
No, I don't think they do. I don't think they see that. They don't see him as a human being. They don't hear it. It's very much now. And this is why Graziano came about and why it took a little bit more to develop, because originally the piece was more on, more personally based on Graziano as a character, as an older man growing older and his regrets about his life and such forth. But after the whole thing about Brexit, and especially after Trump getting voted, you suddenly go, oh, hang on, there's more to the fascist angle than there is, because these people... we've got to remember that people like Benito Mussolini and Adolf Hitler were originally voted in by the general public. They were voted in. They ignored all the nastiness or the silly uniforms and the weird hats and all the skulls and crossbones on the uniform, and they ignored it and voted them in because they thought that they were going to do the best for their countries. And it's that blinkered approach of to politics that we see, and we see most recently with Trump, possibly with Brexit. And when I talk blinkered, I don't mean because everybody who wants to leave the EU is blinkered. I think everybody who wants to stay might be blinkered as well, because there was some awful rhetoric that came out after the vote. And I know on my Facebook page, which I don't do anymore, I've decided I'm not looking at Facebook anymore because it's full of people shouting really obscene things sometimes. But on my Facebook page, even those who want to, Remainers, were saying horrible things, like people living in London going, well, everybody outside of London's obviously a racist and hates it. And they never listened to the arguments of these people. And I always think, well, if you listen to each other, and then maybe there's a middle way and we can actually start talking. And there's a lot of unpleasant rhetoric coming from both sides. And I think that is the whole point. If you look at Brexit as the example, you get the Remainers and the Leavers, and they have their opinions, but they won't listen to the other person's opinion, and they will shout them down. They will call them lefty, Guardian-reading idiots, or they'll call them racist, right-wing...
Now that brings us, in a way, back to the original play and the relevance of your play and the questions you're asking of modern times now. I think it was the actor Ross Gurney Randall, writer, that brought a show called Goering's Defence to various fringes. And in there he introduced us to something called the leadership principle, which is what Goering talked about. And it's the final act of democracy that votes out democracy itself. Yeah. And the reason is that people are actually wretchedly content. Mm. You know, they're kind of in a state of stability and richness, but there's a wretchedness that Antonio says right at the start, in sooth I know not why I am so sad.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what this is. I know there's something not right.
Yeah.
Then you either fall back into wretched contentment again. Mm. So I guess, is this a play that speaks to now? Because we all just voted in Brexit and general elections. And what we're essentially doing, whether we're for or against, we're voting our future and our ability to choose it away from us.
Exactly. And in the play, I question democracy. I do question democracy, how democracy works, how we listen to politicians, and how we only hear what we want to hear. We hear them tell us what we want to hear, and then we vote for them, and then... it takes us down a route that we might not go.
Now, as performer, do you then write that script imagining you performing it?
Ooh, that's a good thing. I don't know. It gets... I'll tell you what, out of this one and The Unknown Soldier, this particular script, the character does have a world of his own. He suddenly becomes quite... There was a point the other night where I felt slightly possessed. it went in a very interesting direction, which we're carrying it on now. But I do write it thinking, yes, I'm going to... I physically write it for myself because I can see myself doing it. I'm not going to write anything in there that I think would be unusual for my age, my character, or my physicality. But sometimes it does surprise you with the character. You write the words and all of a sudden there's an emotion that takes you on a weird...
I'm always interested in that process and that balance between director and writer. Mm. You know, some writers have told me loads goes in the brackets so that, you know, the director can't stitch me up when we're in the rehearsal room. And others put very little in the brackets and they go, yeah, this is the essence of this, but now I want to hand this over to someone and for it to come back to me as the performer with not everything decided at all.
Well, no, I think because when I'm writing for myself and when I'm writing for other people, I am pretty pedantic and put stuff in brackets, go, no, this is how you need to do it and this is what needs to be done. But when I'm writing it for myself, I'm probably not that pedantic because then I can... It's always when you can develop it as an individual performer, you can sort things around.
So give us an insight into that rehearsal process. What does the rehearsal room look like?
It looks like me stuck in an attic learning lines, basically. And then we'll come down into our living room and I'll perform in front of Michel, and Michel will then direct me and tell me what works and what doesn't work, and we'll explore different ways of doing things.
Yeah.
And then there will be the rewrites, because there's always rewrites.
Yeah. And so, you know, this being also your partner in life as well, you know, how does that play positively or negatively into the rehearsal process?
Yes.
Well, she's giggling silently on the same table, but so we're going to hear it from you.
Got to be careful how I answer this, yeah. Well, we've been together, what I always say, we've been together for 6 years now. But 6 years in our relationship is like dog years to human years. In a normal human relationship, we've been together about 18 years, because the fact is we spend virtually 24/7 producing, working together, touring together. So we're together a lot.
But do you take off that skin and just become professional director and actor?
No, of course we don't. No, she shouts at me, I shout at her, and it's like a domestic. It's great.
And did that lead to rewrites of the script?
Yes, we do. There's certain things that, little bits of rewrites will happen on the script as we're going along. There'll be something that doesn't work right and I don't like it, or Michelle will point something out and I go, oh yeah, that's a good idea. So we do, there's always rewrites.
And this is, it's a bit of a tough question in a way, but I'm always interested in this too. Solo work, you had a real hit with Unknown Soldier. It's still something I assume you perform as well. Are there seeds planted in that process that have kind of blossomed in this play?
Oh, God, yeah, I think that, well, there have been, because the fact is The Unknown Soldier was the first time I ever did a solo show. I'd always avoided them before, because I thought, well, who the hell wants to see me on stage ranting away like a lunatic? And after doing that, I thought, okay, so there might be a market out there. And coming now with Graziana, we found that, yeah, there are people who enjoy what I do. So, and there were certain things I did in there that I've learnt how the process works with me and what I'm capable of and what I'm not capable of. So there were certain seeds in The Unknown Soldier that have travelled and informed Graziano and the process that we've used for that, yeah.
And the version I saw of it, it was right on top of the audience. It was very, very intimate, that piece. Have you sort of put any of that into this?
Yeah. I like the small, intimate spaces, because we're back in the Bailey Room with this. So if you're sat on the front row, you're under my knees, basically, and it's good to get in people's faces and give them that sort of presence on the stage. I think, the Bailey Room's great for an intimate space. It's good to be in an audience, amongst the audience.
And so just give us an insight, particularly for theatre makers here too, and audiences. So when you arrive at somewhere like the Bailey Room with some hours for getting, how do you make that space the space you want to perform for the month?
Well, the thing, you've got to remember, we're a touring company, so... We're used to walking into spaces and going, okay, this is the space, and within an hour, it's ours. We travel around a lot, and I've forgotten how many performances. We've done over 100 performances of The Unknown Soldier now. We must have done 30 or 40 of Graziano. So we're getting on with it, and we travel around. We could be in a 500-seat theatre one day, and we could be in something that's like 60 seats with no lights the next day. So
what decisions are you making when you realise, the sight lines are different here, and stuff? Are you just adapting in an improvised way, or are you re-blocking?
No, adapting in an improvised way, yeah. It's easy with a solo show. You've just got to be aware of the audience. You know where they're sat, and you just involve them. All of a sudden it's a thrust stage, that you've just got to make sure that they get your front every now and again. So you can adjust. We very rarely block. We very rarely do a run through in a new space. We wander in there, focus the lights, check the sound, and that's it.
Now, if you're not a big fan of Shakespeare, but you are a big fan of what's going on in the world today, you don't need to be a fan of Shakespeare to come and see this, do you? So tell us, how is this speaking to a potential audience wandering up the Royal Mile saying, what should we go and see in the rain?
That's a good question. How are we speaking to a current audience?
This is a killer question.
It's
come on.
It's a killer question, isn't it? The fact is that, we've got 4 stars recently from Broadway Baby. We have 5 from British Theatre Guide, and we have another 4 from 3 weeks.
But now give me a reason to see it.
And see, because I was voted best actor at Buxton Fringe.
we're gaming here.
Yeah, we are.
So but I'm still asking for it. No, the answer really is there's 3,000 shows to choose from. And my instinct from this, and having seen your previous work, is this is a play that could be of curious interest to Shakespeare fans, but equally it's trying to examine fascism. And, as you say on your own flyer, the key thing here is, things like how did Mussolini manage to use democracy to turn a people against themselves? Yeah. And that is echoing across, the world right now. This is a fringe where, nuclear war could start in a week or so. Yeah. So, just throw a little bit of an invitation to people that wouldn't normally come and see something like this, and they're going to walk away going, I'm still thinking about that a day later.
Yes, they will be still thinking about it, and that's the whole point of it. This is a piece that I want to make people think, And that's what we like to do with everything we do, is that we want people to come out of the theatre, not only entertained, but with some ideas or some notions or some thoughts, and discuss this play, because there's a lot to discuss in here. We examine what it is to be a human being, really, what it is to be a person in the world at the moment, and making those choices of how you vote or where you vote or where you put your allegiances, which is really, really hard work these days. And to try and also understand why the world is changing and going as it is, why we're seeing the Trumps and the Brexits, why we're feeling threatened, why it seems to be going into another sort of madness that is so similar to what happened before the Second World War in the 1920s and 30s. Any student of history will just point things out and say, look, that happened there and it's happening again here. And just it's a case of trying to explore why we're all doing it again. If we keep and we try to understand it, we try to understand the history of it, then maybe we can stop it.
So a play that we've all heard of and is going to dive into what appears to be a minor character from a Shakespeare play we've all heard of, pulls that character out and ends up enabling us all to ask the questions we're still asking today.
Exactly.
So thank you very much for talking to us.
Eloquently put.
I always do. But, thanks very much, Ross.
Pleasure.